asked me if I would come here and maybe share some of my ideas with you about Indian education. I'm always caught in a mental dilemma when I have this task, because I'm not sure what I should talk about. I'm not sure whether I should talk about the problems of Indian education, what we're confronted with, or whether I should talk about the poor education that Anglos are getting relative to the Indian people. And I think in some cases, both of them are just as important as the other. Because if I would try to relate to you some of the history as far as how education, what effect education has had on the individuals of the Iroquois Confederation, probably you would think I was lying, because I would have to refer to possibly some of the contributions of Andrew Jackson. And maybe what you heard about Andrew Jackson in your education is different from what I know about Andrew Jackson from my education. And as a result, you might consider everything that I say as being invalid. Or I might begin to relate the unrelative education that I got relative to the history of the United States as I was in the public education schools as I grew up. For example, as I was in high school and in college, people always referred to the father of this country and how much respect he carried, that George Washington was the man that everybody looked up to as the founder or kind of the individual that represented what the United States represents. And that this man is so respected that, of course, the things, the foundations that he set down are actually the foundations of the country, in a sense. But then I'd have to go back and I'd have to see, why is it then that the contemporary government will not accept George Washington's signature on a treaty that was signed with my people, my ancestors, back in the late 1700s. And so it's very difficult for me to talk on Indian education without at least telling you, and probably most of you are aware of this, that contemporary public education has failed everybody. It is failing everybody. This stereotype, pigeonholed education that the state of New York thinks is good for everybody is failing. That's how it would begin. But that doesn't end in education, but in a sense it is, because we're caught in that right now, at least temporarily. As I recall, as I went through school, the perspectives toward life that I was given in public education. Actually, I'm a product of an all-Indian high school, a BIA school. And when I was in a BIA school, there were certain things that they taught me. There were certain things in the middle 50s that were predominant in BIA schools. And none of it was Indian. It was all to get you away from being an Indian. I recall at the school in Lawrence, Kansas, where I went to high school, how these new people would come from the Southwest, the Navajo kids. And many of them were right from the reservation, where their use of English just wasn't, it was unheard of. And so periodically they would use their native language, and they would be punished for it. And they were told that there's no place in this world, in contemporary society, for the Navajo language, that you should begin to speak English. And you know, as I went through high school there, I had brainwashed into me the misconception that it was not important that I was an Indian. I had brainwashed into me the concept that there is a place for you as an individual in the dominant Anglo society. That all you have to do is prove yourself, become educated, and go out there and find that place. And so I left this BIA school And I tried to find my place. I tried to find my place in this dominant Anglo society that the BIA people had promised me was there. But regardless of wherever I went, I was still Ongwahowe. Now that's the word for Indian that we use. I was still an Ongwahowe. Nobody ever called me an Irishman or said, gee, I thought you were Irish or German or whatever else you might be. Wherever I went, I was Indian, and people expected me to be Indian. I was very proud to be an Indian, of course. I was very proud to carry that heritage with me where I went. But I was confused, because I found that in order for me to succeed in the Anglo society, I had to prove myself day after day after day. I had to prove myself as an individual when I went to college. If I was mediocre, I probably would not have made it. I remember I went to this, as I was in this, the first college I went to. And when I started to college at that time from Onondaga, there were three kids in college at that time. And to show you that I did have some trouble getting through college, it took me 11 years to get a bachelor's degree. 4 different universities. That's how long it took me before I was able to, I guess, become mature enough to accept the fact that there was no place for me out there. That the place where I needed to exist was on the Onondaga Reservation. That I needed to be among my people. And all the problems that I was confronted with at that time, the kids who are going to college today at a place like Oswego, at Syracuse, at Cornell, they're confronted with the very same problems as I was. But let's talk about contemporary education here for a while. Let me try to give you some basic problems that we have. Probably that there are so many of them, and I'm going to miss some, of course. But as I think, the most severe problem that we have is that most of the people in New York State who dictate what education is going to be are from an era of the 1930s. Dr. Bill Fenton, some of his colleagues, they're from an era of when the prime belief and concept was that our Anglo way is best. We should change the savages, we should civilize them, we should educate them, we should take them away from their religion, we should stop them from using their language, and we should assimilate them. This is the main problem, is that the main people right now who are dictating education within New York State are from that era when that was the philosophy of education. And in spite of how hard people try to force this system to become variable, to find exceptions, to be able to introduce education programs that will vary from this, in the back of their mind, that philosophy still exists today. And of course, because of this, the prime problem that education is having, public education today is having, is that this philosophy of total integration and assimilation are present. At Onondaga, our kids go to a school that is off the reservation. From K through 6, they attend a school on the reservation, all Indians. And up to this year, there was never a program on the reservation that would reflect and acknowledge that there is a culture existing on that reservation. When I grew up, I read about Dick and Jane, Puff, and that little other dog, whatever cat that was, in the ball. And very early elementary school on the reservation, I knew about Governor Dewey. I knew about President Roosevelt, Truman. I learned about these people. I learned about the history of Greece on the Onondaga Reservation. And what did that have to do with my education? I'm not sure yet. At that time, I wasn't thinking about relevancy, of course. You know, I wasn't thinking, what does this have to do with how I'm going to make out? You know, I thought maybe someday they were planning to send me to Greece And so, right now, that situation is changing very gradually. Very simply because there is a very strong American Indian movement towards self-determination relative to education, relative to everything. But primarily right tonight, we're concerned with education. And we have a move right now at Onondaga that we're spearheading for all of the Haudenosaunee, or the people of the Longhouse, that reside within New York State and Canada. We're spearheading a movement right now by the fact we have proposed in Albany a separate, not isolated, not segregated school that will be at the Onondaga Reservation, and where some of the intrinsic values of our culture can be taught. Because I know somewhere in your history, somewhere in your schooling, you've heard this message from other Indian people, that unless the dominant Anglo society began to adapt some of the philosophy of the Indian people, you're going to become extinct. We have prophecies that we are aware of, that we're living right today. We have prophecies that tell us that in a certain length of time, our Anglo brothers are going to pollute the earth and pollute the waters and the air so bad that life will stop. The sad part about it is that it's the Anglo brothers doing it. But once they pollute all of the air and the water, I'm going to become extinct too. And so I'm concerned with this type of education for you. I'm concerned, and it's my responsibility, I feel, to relate some of these ideas to you. Well, that's one of the prime problems, two of them, the fact that people want to integrate us, they want to continuously assimilate us, which is, of course, the present contemporary philosophy of public education. But probably the second problem that I would like to talk about and very briefly try to share with you my ideas is the fact that it's important that somewhere, if education is going to change, it has to start with the educators, not with the people they're educating. For you see, the problem at Onondaga that we have, the fact that in the last 10 years, a little over 50% of our students have dropped out of high school, somewhere between K and 12, between 6 and 12, that a little over 50% of our kids have not been able to identify with the Anglo stereotyped education, and they have dropped out. And the result, many of these individuals are not able to cope with this rat race of a life that exists off the reservation. And they become disoriented and they turn to alcohol. On the reservation, none of them turn to drugs. But when they leave the reservation, they turn to drugs. So we've experienced a dropout rate there because of the lack of identity in the public education system as it is today. But we have given Albany, we have presented the State Education Department with a tool that will enable them to correct some of the errors, some of the mistakes, some of the damage that public education has done to Onondaga people and to other Indian groups, of course. I'm talking relative to Onondaga, but it's true wherever you go. And so the problem lies in the educator. You see, because at Onondaga, we have our average grade that our people reach is 2.5 years below the average Anglo grade that they reach in high school. In other words, if the average grade that a person reaches off the reservation is 10.3, well, at Onondaga, it's 8. The average level of education is the 8th grade. That's today. That's a statistic that is true today. The fact that more than 50% of our children drop out of high school, these are not Onondaga problems. These are symptoms of an antiquated, defunct public education system. These are symptoms of the minds that dictate what kind of education is going to be in the public high schools. These are symptoms of the unprepared teachers that attempt to teach minority ethnic groups and stereotype them. These are symptoms of the fact that really the state of New York, in this area of course, is not fulfilling its responsibility to Indian education. And so what have the Onondagas done? Last year, I came back, in a sense. I came back to the Onondaga Reservation. I had been part of it. I had competed with the teams there. But I hadn't really worked with the young people. I had kind of practice taught in the Anglo school for 8 years. Then I came back thinking everything was good, because everything that I read was good. I saw a larger number of Indian students in college. I saw other individuals succeeding in this Anglo world, such as Chief Orrin Lyons there. I saw people being successful, and I thought, today, education-wise, things are good. And so maybe now I can just go back and whatever else can be done, I'll try to help that way. But things weren't good. Things really weren't good. I went back and I found out that the school district where the Onondagas attend have used the Onondaga people to their benefit. In many ways, they have used the Onondaga children, the enrolled students in their school, to acquire funds that were earmarked for Indian students, and they never reached the Indian students. I found out about this dropout rate. I found that the administration at the school were actually trying to end the Onondaga way or the Indian way to live. And as a result of this, I took what I had learned to the Council of Chiefs at Onondaga. And of course, steps were taken, and at that same time, a big article in the paper came out stating that one school in New York State had been investigated, and it had been established that they had misdirected Title I funds, Title II funds, and so forth. But it didn't state the name of the school. And my sister here was a senior last year at Lafayette, of course. And in their way, they did their thing. They began this movement at Onondaga, really they did. Denise and some of the kids that are still there now, they began a movement. Because one day, according to their thinking, they thought it's time that they began to force Lafayette, to force New York State, to force the federal government to fulfill part of a treaty. They said, you promised to educate us. You forcefully integrate us from the reservation into your school. And we have a guarantee that says you will give us the same thing when you bring us off the reservation as we had on the reservation, which included lunches. And so one day, Denise and some of her colleagues decided to go to the lunch line and tell them, we don't have to pay for lunch. Well, they did. They went through the lunch line. They didn't pay for lunch. And this started the whole thing. This is what set it off. Now, this was sometime in November. Late November. And since that time, that was the last time that the superintendent of the schools spoke friendly to me, because he expected me, as the token Indian, I was the only Indian teacher in this high school. He expected these token Indian to go down to the reservation and get things straightened out for him. Instead, I said, you ought to give them free lunches. They have that right. You have that responsibility to carry out to them. Well, that was the last time he spoke to me friendly. Because a few months later, as other facts began to rise out of that pot, that melting pot that he likes to talk about, one day we decided we're going to have to list our grievances and present them to the State Education Department. And we called the people at Onondaga together, and we decided to boycott Lafayette Central High School for 2 days. Now, this is a very difficult thing to do. We wanted a 100% boycott. 100% of the Indian students were to walk out and stay out for 2 days. Well, things happened so fast. We had planned the boycott on a Wednesday night. We called all the people that would come together, which I have never seen so many people in the Longhouse, from all reservation at one time. They came to the Longhouse, and they decided, we'll boycott. Many people to know, one person stood up and said, I'm against the boycott. But if it's going to make things better for our children's education, then I'll keep my kids out. And so on Friday, we were going to try to keep everything quiet. We were going to boycott on Monday. And the only reason for the boycott was to call the state education department officials to our Longhouse and have them listen to our grievances and to our oral presentation of a proposal for high school on the reservation. Well, on Friday, you know, the school administration wasn't supposed to know about the boycott on Monday, but it's impossible to do that because some of our kids are so conscientious. One of the students went to his teacher and said, I need to know what the assignment is for on Monday. And he says, why? He says, because I'm not going to be here. And he says, why aren't you going to be here? He says, because no one's going to be here. And of course, the teacher right away went right to the principal, to the chief administrator, and then they came to me. And I said, that's right. As long as you know now, we're not going to be here in school Monday. And he said, why? And I said, because we want to air our grievances to the state education department relative to Lafayette Central High School administration and the state education department. Well, the next day, which was a Saturday, Dr. Thomas Sheldon, who was the Deputy Commissioner of Education, came to Lafayette Central, and he wanted to meet with our people then. You see, when we put the pressure on them, they wanted to meet then, but we had tried to contact this man for a month to no avail. I just think, I would call the state education department number and say, my name is Lloyd Elm, I teach at Lafayette, I'm an Onondaga Indian, I'd like to talk to someone who can give me an answer. And I talked to so many secretaries there, and I was sidetracked so many times, and I was put on hold so many times. I think most of the time that I was, we still have to catch up with this whole time that I spent on the telephone waiting to hear a voice, a human voice, say something to me on the other end. Well, anyway, Dr. Sheldon came to Onondaga the Saturday before he was supposed to. But we weren't ready to meet with him because on that day we were having a Six Nation meeting and we couldn't talk to him. He thought we could come out of that Six Nation meeting and the chiefs, we could sit down and we could straighten things out. I told him, there's no way. I says, those chiefs are right now in the Six Nation meeting. They're not going to come out of that meeting. I says, Monday's the time we want you at our Longhouse. He said, okay, I'll be there. But he says, now call off the boycott. But we couldn't do that, you see, because by our law, when we pass something like that as a law, as a mandated policy, we can't change a law as easily as Albany or Washington can, you know. We can't change our laws or our policies like that, not that quickly anyway. So we boycotted for 2 days, and they did come to our Longhouse. Dr. Sheldon and three of his staff members came there. And we presented 14 grievances against the Lafayette Central High School administration. We presented 12 grievances against the state education department. The prime one, of course, being the fact that they do not teach at schools like Oswego or Cortland or wherever the other state schools are where they prepare teachers. There is no course that teaches the potential teacher how to deal with any minority ethnic group. There is no course that actually at that time was teaching the intrinsic values that exist in these cultures. So these new teachers coming in could set up and establish a working rapport with individuals from this culture. And so we presented the grievances there. At the same time, we presented our proposal for the separate high school at Onondaga. Now that was a little over a year ago we did this. That was a little over a year ago when Dr. Sheldon came to our reservation. Since that time, we have met three times. And for the first time, we have an agreement where all the meetings will not be in Albany. They said we'll alternate. First we'll meet in your longhouse. Then we'll meet at the state education offices in Albany. Then we'll come back to your longhouse. And this is quite a step. This is quite a step because every time before this, whenever the Onondagas wanted to negotiate anything with New York State, our chiefs had to go to Albany. They had to go there to conduct nation business. Well, at the present time, the status of the school is, let me put it this way, that the answer that Dr. Sheldon gave us in a very recent letter, I just talked to him today on the telephone for the next meeting. The high school at Onondaga is within the feasibility realm of the state education department. Now, whatever that means, I'm not sure. But we're very optimistic over this proposal because according to what they tell us, in order for other school districts to propose a separate school as we have, that within 1 year we have covered the same amount of ground that other schools cover in 3 or 4 years in their proposals for new high schools. So we're very optimistic. And we know there will come a time, if all of you become educators, when in some way, form, or fashion, you will come to the Onondaga Reservation and you will find a school there. You will find a very unique type of school that will be functioning there, whether New York State supports it or not. We're going to have a separate school. But isn't this school that tells you that in order to have status in your society, you have to be a professional? In order to have status, you have to know the functions of calculus. In order to have status, you've got to have this stereotyped public education before you can be able to express yourself, express your own native abilities that the Creator has given to everyone. This school is going to be a fully accredited high school. But at the same time, we are going to emphasize the talents that individuals have. The individual talents are going to be, they're going to come first. For among our people, there are many people who, their talents, such as art and music and so forth, have never really been brought out, because in order to bring those out, they first have to have that stereotyped education. They have to have that education, this pigeonhole education that you get 16 credits to graduate from high school. 4 of them are English, 4 are social studies, 4 are math, and 4 are whatever else they feel should be to fulfill the requirements to graduate from high school. Many of your people fail too because of the very same thing. Many of your people are passed up because they have talents that are never really fully brought to bloom because they're not able to express themselves, because they're uneducated, because they don't have this stereotype of public education that exists in the Anglo society today. But our education is going to be different. The type of education that these young Indian kids are going to get from this school is going to be where they, as individuals, with the talents that the Creator gave to them, these are going to be the most important things in that school. We're going to prepare them to live. We're going to make them... This is what I consider a successful Ungwahonwe. The education-wise is when a person does on his own or in the education system fulfill himself with a bicultural education. It's necessary. In most cases, a bicultural, bilingual education is essential for any Ungwahonwe today to fully succeed. Then on the other hand, if we're caught in the stereotype of a bicultural education, then one of it is going to fall way short. Let me give you an example. We have a student at Lafayette right now who has failed many, many times. But she's failed because what they're trying to teach her isn't relevant to what she understands. She's unable to identify with this status, with this type of education system that places most of its values on money, that everything is judged by how much will it cost, what can I get in return from it. She can't identify with that. And all of a sudden, one day, this girl, through her own ability, she began to wear to school some of the traditional art that she had been producing in beadwork. I heard a teacher say this week, even though this young girl is right now failing in that high school, that there's no question in their mind that this girl could become a teacher in that high school if they had a course in artistic beadwork. She would be an expertise at 16 years old. But because beadwork isn't part of the curriculum, not even the art curriculum, this girl is being shuffled. She's being put aside. And yet, she has a talent. She has a talent that she has forced upon that high school. And they recognize her talent now. I'm not sure what's going to happen to this girl. I'm not sure whether that system will bend enough so that she'll be able to get at least a token stereotype Anglo education, so that she can become an expertise, so she can teach this talent that the Creator has given to her to other Indian children. Well, I guarantee you, when we have our high school, which we're going to have, she's going to be able to fulfill herself there, because she'll be able to teach what she has to the younger kids in that high school. Do you see, we have taken great steps at Onondaga. I feel we have. Along with other people like at the Rough Rock Navajo School, where they have their separate school on the reservation, where they are becoming very self-determining there. This is what we want at Onondaga. Many people say we are isolating ourselves, and that isn't true. Many people are saying that we do not want to integrate, and that isn't true. We want to integrate. But when we integrate, we want our students to integrate with pride and integrity, where they can go freely from one culture to another culture and back again, never forgetting the Indian culture, the Indian way to live. Because we're positive that the only way we're going to perpetuate ourselves as mankind is that when we pass some of these principles of ecology and conservation to our brother, to our Anglo brothers. This is the only way we're going to succeed. And so we have a problem in education, that's true. But we're doing something about it now. We're trying very desperately to become self-determining so that we can teach our children again what it is to have an Indian identity. So we can teach them about Handsome Lake and about the peacemaker. We can teach them the laws that these people brought to us. And so you see, we have our problems right now because in Albany yet, I know that the individuals that control the State Education Department, they are from this same era of the 30s when the Anglo people thought there's only one thing we can do to make things right. We have got to force our education, we have got to force our religion, we have to force our society so we can save those savages from hell. And boy, I'll tell you, when I see that, it just turns me upside down. And I know that you people sitting there know what I'm talking about. I know that you know what I mean when I'm telling you these people are pigeonholing you. And they're saying you're not good until you're this way, because this is the best way. And who said that? Some guy in Albany said that. Maybe it was Andrew Jackson that said that. Or George Washington. Or Bill Fenton. I like to have that. You know, I hope that in some way, I have, in a short time, maybe we have time for questions later, I'll be glad to answer, you know. But there's so many things, there's so many important things that I would like to convey to you, but I think I have conveyed one thing to you. That's what I came here for. I want to let you know that the Onondagas, the Indian people, are moving towards self-determination in education. We are no longer going to depend upon you to do it for us. We're not asking you anymore to do this, because for 200 years, we have said senator and governor and lawyer, would you help us? And they say, yes, we'll help you if you do it our way. And over these 200 years, our way has been no longer can you talk Indian. You shouldn't participate in the Indian religion anymore. It's wrong to do that. The Longhouse people have been tagged as being pagan by Fenton many times. The leading anthropologist in New York State, he has more pamphlets in this universe than any other anthropologist. He is the expert. And yet, I was reading one of his papers at Cortland in one of the anthropology classes that they were studying Iroquoian culture. And he described what he thought was the strawberry dance, the strawberry festival, which is a festival we hold around the month of June when the strawberries ripen. And he described this strawberry festival that he had witnessed at one of the Seneca reservations somewhere in his studying time. And what I read there, I had never seen that. Maybe parts of it I could have recognized as being the strawberry dance, the strawberry festival. But the thing he ended with was what shocked me. He said, the strawberry dance no longer takes place. This strawberry festival is no longer carried out by the people of the Longhouse. This man is considered the expertise. And all of those students at Cortland who read that said, why isn't the strawberry festival no longer carried out by the people of the Longhouse? The Sunday before that, I was at the strawberry festival at the Onondaga Reservation. We did the great feather dance. We gave our acknowledges to the Creator and our thanks for everything that we have in the strawberry festival. And yet Fenton, in his article that young educators, potential educators like yourselves, are reading, he said that strawberry festival no longer exists. This is why I'm bringing to you a message. You have to be careful what you read. Don't take literally what non-Indian authors are telling you. Because in every case, a non-Indian author writes what he wants to write, his interpretation of what he sees. And I guarantee you, none of them have ever become an Unguhowi. So there is no way that they can ever feel the way an Indian feels. And so in other words, there is no way that they can ever write the way an Indian would write, or describe any of the culture the way an Indian would do that. So there's another problem. The problem is the textbook that you're reading, they're so wrong, it's not even worth bringing it to you right now, because there's so many things we could talk about. That in itself would be a seminar, easily an 8-week seminar, trying to find the things that were wrong with what's in the history books today. You know, I often wondered about assimilation. My friend over here, maybe he'll tell you his definition of what assimilation is. I can't, that's his jewel. Maybe he'll tell you what his definition of assimilation is sometime. Ask him later when he's talking what assimilation means to him. Well, I'm just about through now. I hope that I've enlightened you as to what our movement is. I hope I've made you aware that the Indian people are very dissatisfied with public education. And we are going to change it for our people. We are going to change the education system for our people. And it's your responsibility to change the education system for your people. We'll take care of ourselves. You take care of your people. Yahweh.
May I mention that the Miccosukee Indians never had a school until 1962, but now it's their school. It's federally funded, but they control it completely. They hire and fire the teachers. They have the school board. Completely their school.
That's our intention. Not to hire and fire or to fire, but to have our own school board and run it totally self-determining. Right? That's what we intend to do.
I know I've gone to
I guess if you can, what we intend to do, of course, if you tag things right, they'll allow you to vary from this set pattern. For example, if you would tag your school as an experimental demonstration school, they'll let you vary from that. And so we're going to play the game. We're going to initially call our school a demonstration experimental school. But we know it's going to work. And by doing this, we won't run into all of this bureaucracy that you're talking about. We're going to get it, though. But by that time, it's going to be too late. By that time, we're going to have control of that. Students are going to be coming out and coming to Oswego State. And they're going to have a more fulfilled secondary education than I would say that 98% of the kids coming here are going to have.
Okay. Do you think that they would be able to go from a school of this type back into a university system where academics of a different type were taught, where you did get back into the mathematics?
Well, you must have misunderstood me then, because I said the school itself is going to be a fully accredited high school. That means we are going to have, and somewhere along the way, they are going to meet the requirements for 4 years of English, 4 years of math, 4 years of science, or whatever track there might be. Now, where they're going to have the advantage, of course, is that they're going to come to a college like this with a much deeper understanding, a much closer relationship to Mother Earth. Because of this, they're going to be successful. But you see, I wasn't talking about a high school where none of the academics are going to be taught. In fact, if we have room, we might even teach French or German. But that's not important right now. They can take French and German when they come to Oswego.
I think we as Anglo educators, in systems where we are teaching just white people, do you think it's important for us to change attitudes of the students we are in front of?
Oh, yes.
Concerning the Indian problems?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, what is it? It's unbelievable. For example, how many of you have ever met an Indian prior to coming to Oswego? How many of you knew an Indian person? Now, probably, if you have met some Indian and you visited with him sometime, or you might have spent a weekend on a reservation and you came away with him and he says, now I know what there's no about Indian people.